Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 5 of Goddamn GameCube. If you like our show, please leave us a rating on Spotify and subscribe on YouTube. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hey, everyone, welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today, and today we are talking about Assassin's Creed, only the first game. Riley, take it away.
Yes, sir. So Assassin's Creed, potentially one of the most lucrative franchises in video games history.
At least the past 15 years.
Exactly. Yeah. The original, however, is somewhat forgotten, I would say, in the cultural context. It came out in 2007, developed and published by Ubisoft. Why are we talking about this particular game?
So, for our fans listening, I recommend going back and listening to our Prince of Persia Sands of Time episode from last week. It's not strictly necessary that you listen to it, but we are covering Assassin's Creed today because we are talking about how Prince of Persia Sands of Time was the original Assassin's Creed, and how mechanics from that game were sort of the impetus and the start for the mechanics of this game, and how I would say a lot of gamers, especially under the age of 30, are either unaware of Prince of Persia Sands of Time or unaware of how or where Assassin's Creed came from. So last week we talked about Prince of Persia, and today we're talking about Assassin's Creed, specifically the first game.
Yes.
So go ahead, Riley, let's do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, building right off of that, apparently this began development as another Prince of Persia game. So it was going to be, you know, it was the next gen Prince of Persia, building off Sands of Time. And they gradually zeroed in on the idea of this time you were playing as the prince's bodyguard, which would have been kind of interesting.
That's interesting. So people are coming after the prince and you're killing them?
Yes.
Wow.
So I think that would have been an interesting... We were talking about grappling with sequel ideas and stuff. This would have been an interesting take where you have this guy who can rewind time, but you're not playing as him.
Huh.
But apparently they didn't like... The higher-ups, the suits, didn't like this idea because Prince of Persia, we got to have Prince of Persia in the hot seat.
So. Got it.
Brand new IP, clearly worked out for them. Assassin's Creed, what did we say? There's like 15 of them now, something like that.
Honestly, I don't care, but like there are many.
Yeah, but I mean, what would you say is overall the appeal of these games? Why are they so successful?
Marketing. So
that's a big part.
If I were to answer your question seriously, it's actually difficult for me to answer your question seriously. I think they did a very good job marketing the first one as a next-gen sword and board game.
Yeah.
Like a next-gen medieval sword fighting game.
Yes.
But the big reason why we're talking about this, and we'll get into it over the course of the episode, the first Assassin's Creed is a lot more than that. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on.
Yes.
But how is Assassin's Creed so successful? A part of it is the Ubisoft marketing engine.
Yeah.
And a part of it is this, it has a little bit of like, I give credit to our friend Kyle here, a little bit of is like a magic treehouse thing, go back into parts of history and play through them.
Yeah.
And Ubisoft, as much as I deride a lot of the entries in this franchise, they do a cool job researching the areas you're going to be playing in and having, like, you know, you're climbing actual buildings from history.
Yes.
Some of that stuff is probably the appeal.
Despite my complaints as well, I really do respect that every time they seem to turn it in when it comes to historical research, like all the buildings look correct and all that kind of stuff. And so what I want to say about also the general appeal, we're going to get into this, but it's also a lot of how they play, I think, it's becoming like even outside of Assassin's Creed, I think this type of game is very, very lucrative. So getting into the premise of this game, you mentioned it was kind of advertised as a medieval game. The premise is actually kind of contentious because there is... spoiler alert, a present day timeline in this game as well, which the marketing team had reservations about portraying because they thought it was going to undermine this next gen medieval game.
I actually think that was now I need to ask you this. I don't think the modern day element was advertised. Am I wrong?
You are correct.
Yeah.
It was not.
And I, was I, a- I actually think it's to the game's credit that the modern day plot line was not advertised, because you kind of put what's it called, a rug pull?
Yes.
You kind of get a little rug pull for all the gamers, where you think this is like an Arabian Nights kind of like medieval, almost like medieval, you know,
Crusades
kind of game, but it's actually not. It takes place in modern day, and you're going into the memories of people from that time.
Yeah.
Really interesting setup.
Yes. The thing about it is, I think, number one, they were rightly concerned about this, because I remember people reading at the time, even though it's such a small part of the game, people were miffed that this was in the game. And I was like, wait, am I crazy? I think this is cool.
This might be another goddamn GameCube against the internet conversation. But like, on goddamn GameCube, we think the Desmond sections are interesting.
Yes.
That's how the plot kind of moves.
It is. And honestly, I do have one major complaint. I think that for this first game, they should have saved it till the end.
Really?
I think it should have played out as...
where you're seeing these little memory glitches, but you don't know what it is.
Yes. And at the end, I think it would be considered an all-timer.
All-time rug pull.
Like, incredible twist, right? And then the second one would be you trying to figure out how to escape, right?
Got it. I think what you've displayed is a good idea, but it does take some of the interesting parts out of this game.
Yeah.
And this game does not have much to stand on, as we're going to talk about.
No, I just think it would have been an incredible twist had they hung on to it.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Even if just because it's right at the beginning.
Yeah.
I think even halfway through it would have been kind of interesting.
Yeah, you got to hold on longer than the first 30 seconds.
Yes. That's my take. But so do you like the Crusades as a setting? Like, do you think they're interesting enough?
So I've never seen it before this.
Yeah.
So I would say yes, where especially I played this as a kid. I played it when it came out, 2007. I don't know. I was 14.
Yeah.
I don't really know anything about that.
Yeah.
Right. So it's an interesting historical glimpse because I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. And especially from the perspective of this, because I didn't know that the word assassin is from this order of the Hashashuin.
I didn't know that.
And that their role in the Crusades is they're kind of on both sides' shit list.
Because
they're from different Muslim denominations as, Saladin and his Saracens?
Oh, I didn't know that.
They're completely different. So they don't like each other either. So they killed hundreds of people historically and knives and arrows and all this type of shit. Huh. So they were
there's some thoughtful history stuff in this.
I haven't seen them portrayed in this way in any other media.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get into, because another contentious aspect of this game is how it plays, but it will set an important precedent for the next million years of games.
Yes.
So if you're playing this now, having experienced such games, probably very few surprises when it comes to action-adventure. A lot of the same stuff we talked about with Prince of Persia, with the parkour and climbing.
Free running.
That kind of thing. Very rudimentary combat. But there are a few quirks that I think are notable for either being unique or the earliest examples of these things that I can remember modern games. So number one, I actually think the control scheme is pretty thoughtful.
Where you pull the trigger and the button faces change.
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
Because more acrobatic or athletic actions, similar to Prince of Persia, like running or swinging on the overhead poles, jumping off buildings into piles of hay, they are executed by holding the right trigger. What this does is it changes the value of each of the face buttons, A, B, X, and Y. It doubles your button mapping real estate just with the press of the right trigger. I think that's incredible, especially at this time when a lot of developers, people are still having a difficult time getting every action you can
onto a
do
button.
Onto a controller.
And I think it's kind of neat how they describe it in the gameplay, where they say, if you don't pull a trigger, if you don't pull the right trigger, the face buttons will do socially acceptable actions.
Yeah.
If you hold right trigger, you are doing aggressive physical action and people are going to watch what you're doing and they don't like it.
Example, you hold A and you will slowly walk and try to blend in with a crowd. If you press right trigger and hold A, you start running.
Yep. And then, right? Of course, people are going to say, what is this guy doing?
Yep. They're going to pay attention to you.
And
the social stealth is another aspect I want to get into. Would you say it's fairly innovative for its time?
So I really have to make sure when I go back in my Greg brain, I can't think about how much I hate Assassin's Creed. I have to think about in 2007 how unique it was.
Yes.
So for me, absolutely. Like, even though we'll get into it, but the gameplay loops and the stealth stuff doesn't play out well, mm-hmm. in my view. It's very unique where if you pull, you know, okay, if you don't pull right trigger and you want to blend in, you can blend in with essentially people who are dressed like you. If you want to sit on a bench.
It's very convenient.
But, yeah, it's very convenient. But if you want to like sit on a bench and look like you're relaxing, people will leave you alone.
Yeah.
It's interesting, right?
It is.
I mean, there's a lot of...
2007, I can't think of many.
We'll get into this too. I actually, because I replayed the game for this episode, there were a lot of iconic visual images in this game that I forgot about.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of iconic stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of that system of, you know, someone is paying attention to me or someone thinks that I am like the guards specifically, like they like there's different levels of awareness insofar as like it's not something like Metal Gear where you don't want to be seen. It's the level of it's like what you're doing.
You don't want to be seen doing this.
Right. And I'm not sure. Does maybe like Hitman come before this? Or
yeah.
Is it like,
so Hitman Blood Money does do this, but it's very cut and dry. If you're dressed as the wrong thing, guards up.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is a little bit more nuanced.
For sure. And I also think it's really cool. If you accidentally stumble into a guard or ride a horse near them, they will draw swords.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you do anything threatening or weird, people will come after you.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. And so when you do get caught or other specific situations, you will occasionally have to fight your way out. So let's talk about the combat. What do you think of it?
It is a worse playing Prince of Persia Sands of Time.
Correct.
So here's what can I lay out a couple of points?
Yeah.
Unless you'd like to start.
No, I was just going to say what's wrong with it and how would you fix it? Because I have a few thoughts, but you go
so
first.
There are a couple of issues where the countering, I want to say one positive. The countering looks fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
When you're like, there are really only three weapons, hidden blade, short blade, regular sword.
Yeah. And there's a couple of different counters for
sure.
Each.
What I think is awesome, there are some cool fucking animations. Like stabbing the short blade through someone's skull is awesome.
Yes.
Like ripping through someone's stomach or just like having your hand on their back and you're just stabbing them
over
and
over.
That
might be the coolest weapon because like the one where you
stab them in the foot and put it through the neck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's great.
Okay. The animations look fucking sick.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that the actual like efficiency of the combat is like piss poor.
Yeah.
So the problem I run into is that there are a variety of, how do I say this? You counter only one way,
mm-hmm.
but the varieties of counters, the efficiency changes and I don't understand what causes them.
Right.
So here we go. If you do a counter move and Altair kills the enemy, you'll kill them in one hit and they're done.
Right.
But sometimes Altair will punch them in the stomach and knock them over.
Yes.
But there is no button press for running during combat. You have to press A and like step forward.
Yeah.
So sometimes you will toss somebody and knock them on the ground, but then you have to slowly make your way over to them and slash at them, and there's no efficient way to do it. So you're almost praying that Altair stabs them and kills them, because if you knock them on the ground, it's so annoying.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things where, and to be clear, we didn't even really go over this, but Altair is the character you play as during the Crusades. Desmond is his descendant in the present day.
Kind of interesting how the character model is identical.
Yes.
Your face is the same.
And not just him. We'll get into that too. But yeah, it is very, whereas Sands of Time's combat was criticized for simplicity, this feels like even worse.
This is worse. And it just, for some, this is difficult for me to say. I have this in my notes a lot. The vibe is right, but it feels wrong.
Yeah.
Like, the game doesn't feel right.
It just doesn't. It feels very robotic when you're attacking somebody. It just doesn't feel
there
like
there is no, do you know what I think is wrong? There's no flow to the swinging.
Right.
It feels like when I'm pressing, this is odd, where I would have a critique of Assassin's Creed, but a positive of Dark Souls.
Right.
The swinging of a sword in Assassin's Creed feels very slow and wrong, but the swinging of a sword in Dark Souls feels very slow and right.
Right.
It's just, I feel like there's no rhythm to, like, when you swing a sword and someone blocks it, what happens next.
Right.
It doesn't feel right.
It's just happening.
And I feel like in Assassin's Creed, there are four moves, right? You're either swinging, blocking, countering, or throwing someone with your hand, or preventing them from doing that to you.
Right.
That's all there is. And there's something wrong with it. And I don't know what it is.
Well, here's something I want to say is that whereas I feel like Sands of Time is one of those games where I think it kind of fits into the Greg category of games that are amazing that ruined everything because it led to this.
Yes.
You know? And not like this, but the thing is, what I don't want the audience to get confused is that I'm going to ultimately going to go to bat for this game. But in terms of when it came out, it was very derided because it was kind of seen as like a Broken Promises game where it was like very built up. It's the people who made Prince of Persia. It's Ubisoft. It's going to be the next big thing. And there are all these glaring flaws that make it look very shallow.
Yeah. So I will say this too. I don't know if you know this. There was supposed to be a quote unquote realistic damage module in this game. Did you know this?
No.
Where if you took one swing, it was game over.
Oh, wow.
It was supposed to be like Thief, right, where you are an assassin, you stab people and leave. If you get into open combat, you're in trouble.
Right.
It was supposed to be like, hey, you take a swing or two, it's game over.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that.
No.
I think I've said this on the show before. It's unfortunate. We are ultimately going to go to bat for this game in some ways.
Yeah.
But there is a lot to dislike about how it plays.
Yeah.
But why don't you continue? Like, we could get into it a lot,
yeah,
but you'd bring me to the next place.
Well, so rather than what you said, which was one hit and you're dead, or a conventional health meter, it's kind of portrayed as how synchronized the two people are and like how closely Desmond is synchronized to Altair in the simulation. That's what's going away when you either take damage or attack someone.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. It's like, it's, that's how it measures it.
I do like how game over is sort of shielded by, no, it's not game over. It's just, you need to resync this memory because that's not what happened.
Yeah. And so when you're fully synchronized, you can use Eagle Vision.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find this useful at all?
I kept forgetting it existed.
Me too. Cause it's really all it does is it kind of, so this is another thing that carries down into like Shadow of Mordor and that kind of game, very similar system where you have kind of this altered state. It's kind of the twilight view of it. It'll mark like who is important, like your target will be marked in gold. Enemies will be in red.
Yeah.
Your allies, mm-hmm, will be blue, et cetera. It was so just divorced from the rest of the experience that I kept forgetting.
Yeah,
it's probably useful if you get lost, but yeah. I don't know. There are also these like glitches that keep happening that you get an achievement for interacting with a certain amount. Do you know what those are supposed to do? Or
it's cool. It's actually just another cinematic way to view the game.
Right.
What they are is they're called memory glitches where you're, let's say there's a like a cutscene, a cinematic. Mm-hmm. When a glitch appears on the screen, you press any button and it will show you the cinematic from another camera angle.
Right.
And that's all it is.
Well, there's some moments where you have, and it's very kind of Metal Gear where you're not really sure what the time frame is for this happening. When Altair kills one of his targets, they have a conversation as they're dying. And when you hit one of these glitches, it sometimes shows the other character, like the dying character, as standing up or like
walking around and talking to you.
And it's just kind of the ways that these are happening. I mean, it's all just excused because in universe, it's like a simulation, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
They do it. I think the game actually excuses stuff away and tastefully.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like that a lot. As far as traversal goes too, before we get too far away from how it plays, I think generally pretty smooth for a 2007 game, but I think there are a couple hiccups we should probably talk about.
I've got one off the bat.
Let's hear it.
So I don't know if you and I are going to align on this. One of the coolest, most iconic moments from the game is the Eagle Dive.
Yes.
Is that what it's called? Where
Leap of Faith.
Leap of Faith. Yeah. So the Leap of Faith where you are perched like a bird, mm-hmm, and you can dive into a barrel of hay hundreds of feet below you and be safe.
Right.
But there's no button to tell you whether you're going to do it or not,
mm-hmm,
which means you have to hope you're holding right trigger and you're pressing A and your character is targeting the hay or you're going to jump and die.
Right.
It's later in the games, there's a button press for it,
yeah,
but it's not contextual in this. It sucks.
And I mean, with the benefit of, I mean, this is obviously very impressive for its time, but with the benefit of hindsight, they definitely made it feel a lot better in the sequels.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
Climbing around and running. And
what flaws did you have with the free running and stuff?
Just like missed jumps where it shouldn't, like it just didn't magnetize as well as it could have. Did you have any?
So there's some positive and negative here. I had this in my notes. One of the coolest parts about Assassin's Creed 1 is how natural the handholds are.
Right.
I don't mean the game holding your hand. I mean where Altair is climbing buildings.
Yes.
They don't have these painted grab here, jump here. It's you are hanging onto windowsills, grates on windows, little flaws in the design of the buildings to climb.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always play well, but it is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That there's like, it's not just say, you know, this is a game, you're playing a game.
No, you have to climb up the flaws of this brick.
Right.
And if there isn't a brick for you to grab, that's it.
And this is borderline getting into presentation, but is this also the one where this is the first one with the leg? You know what I'm talking about, on stairs, where it would making sure the leg was animated appropriately for going up the stairs?
The Resident Evil 1 remake did that.
It did.
You go up every stair.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? Where he's standing on with one leg on a lower stair.
Oh, okay. You could be right. You could be right.
And animating him in that way.
You could be right.
I couldn't remember if it was this one or the second one.
What I do like too, we're drifting into presentation. We'll probably go there next, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Like too is how your interactions with random townspeople feel very like clunky, but okay.
Yeah.
Where if you're like jogging through the street and guards are running after you, run into someone, you fall over and roll around.
It looks awesome.
And the way you like, if you accidentally run up into a building, you put your hands out.
Right.
There's some cool stuff like in this game.
So before we get full on into presentation, that all fits. But in terms of, we were talking about the eagle dives or the leaps of faith. That you can also ride a horse around, like a fairly sizable like, world map. And there's really not a lot to do. But except for like the most valuable things are climbing these towers, which are also in the towns. So you climb up these like viewpoints or
synchronization
vantage points. And it's basically your character sits up there and kind of takes in the countryside and it fills in your map. And this is incredibly common. Like, it's in Far Cry.
It's everything.
In Shadow of Mordor.
Are you right that this was the first time that this happened?
I think you're right.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
I'll say this too, but it starts to feed into the flaws of the game where you do it too much.
Oh, yeah. Because especially, I mean, the towns have their own little subquests, but there's not a ton to do out here except that. You can collect all the flags, which I did as a kid. And
wow.
Oh my God, what a fucking waste of time.
Yeah.
And you can also, this is probably the only one I derived any sense of enjoyment out of, but you could also go after like these minor Templar guys.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they're in like hard to reach spots mm-hmm. or like you have to attack them from the front and they're tough.
Well, a huge flaw of this game is a lot of the gameplay's collectibles are pointless.
It is very repetitive.
Yeah. It was derided as such appropriately, I think.
At the time, yeah. And it's kind of gotten better since then, in terms of the variety at least. But I think this is tapping into the popularity of the series a lot. If you touch this nerve a little further, you'll get there. So over the course of the game, Altair needs to assassinate 9 different targets in the cities of Damascus, Jerusalem, and Acre.
Pronounce Acre in the game.
Some of them.
Yeah.
Some of them say Acre.
Yeah.
But you're given very little information about the target beforehand, and you're tasked with gathering details about them via side quests, just so you can get the option to go after them.
Sure.
So these are really just eavesdropping, pickpocketing, and interrogation.
So we gotta open up this, right? We gotta dig open this.
I need to talk to you about how enjoyable these tasks are and how much they actually wind up mattering.
It means they're not enjoyable and they don't matter.
Right.
So we got to open this up.
Yes.
This is a huge contention point, and I think critics are right where the gameplay loop of Assassin's Creed is poor.
Yeah.
It's not good. So the way, I'm going to go back to this line in my notes a lot. The vibe is right. The gameplay is not right.
Right.
Where I kind of like how you have to go to a city and you have to go to the Assassin's Bureau and they tell you about your target, but you have to go out into the world and learn about them before you can commit to the murder.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what you actually have to do to get that information is so dumb.
Yeah.
Like, you were right. All you do is either pickpocket, mm-hmm. intimidate people, get into a fist fight, eavesdrop, or pick, or what? There are assassin informants who have you do a mini game.
And that's it.
Ouch. Like, so, ouch, man.
Here's the thing. Like, you were just kind of giving me the eye roll about how it got better. And I think you're right, where it didn't get that much better. And I think it was on purpose, because these are tasks that if you are not very familiar with playing video games, you could probably do.
And I'll say this, you start to see the repetitious gameplay loop too early.
It is.
Okay, but here's the problem. Yeah. Ready? How do you get to a pickpocketing segment? You have to go to a vantage point. You got to synchronize. Then the pickpocketing thing will become a mini map icon that you can go pursue.
Right.
The gameplay loop, it can't be understated how, I think, bad it is.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty bad.
No, it's bad. And I think that is part of the appeal of this series, is how simplistic it is.
Let me ask you this. Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Do you think the gameplay loop would have been improved if investigating the different 9 targets were all unique and they were all in just natural within the city?
Of fucking course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm asking for a lot. Like, I understand.
Well, because that would be asking the audience to pay closer attention to the game.
Well,
and if
I need
you
to,
don't, you can just have people.
I need to bring this up
it.
Too. The second half of your question I did not answer.
What's
which
that?
Is how useful is the information you gather?
It's not.
It is not at all. All it really does is it unlocks a loading screen where you can go pursue the target.
Here's,
like, sometimes people will say, oh, this person's in the church. There are no archers on the roof. I don't care. Like, it doesn't really matter. I would go Hidden Blade them anyway. It doesn't fucking matter.
But here's the thing. Like, there's a couple where it's like there's a secret way into this facility or whatever, wherever your target is. There's a couple of, like, giving you tips about where guards are. The game is so simple and straightforward and ultimately easy that none of this research matters.
I'll fight you on one point. I don't think the combat is that easy. Because here's the thing.
At first, it's very hard. I'll give you that.
At first, because your maximum health is low.
Yeah.
And we'll probably talk about this as a part of the story. There's one thing about the gameplay in this game that I love, is that you have all of your abilities and powers stripped from you in the beginning. So you get to play as Altair.
The Metroid
kind
of setup.
So you get to play as powerful Altair briefly.
Yes.
And then we'll get to the story. You fuck something up and all of your weapons and powers are stripped from you.
Yeah.
So then having to complete these assassinations with no abilities, low health, and no weapons and no advanced weaponry is really hard.
Right.
And like, enemies do a lot of damage. Like, I'd say this game is not that easy, but that's the only point I would fight you on.
No, yeah. Right. I just feel like, if I'm going to spend my time trying to figure out how to just counter a bunch of guys or go through this rigorous, like, oh, this unique route, you know, I don't know. It's very
I will say this too. There is, the game is at odds with itself frequently.
Yeah.
Where you are an assassin, you have to gain information about how to murder somebody, but it doesn't fucking matter because you can just get into combat with 20 guys and lay waste.
Right.
You shouldn't be able to.
Do you know the tidbit about side quests in this game?
What do you mean?
How they came to be included?
I don't. Go ahead.
So apparently the CEO's kid played a beta version of the game and called it boring. So the CEO said, you need to put more stuff in this game. And
is that why there's like the rescue villager stuff and the...
Yeah. And flags and all that.
That kid's probably our age now. Fuck you, man.
I hate him.
Fuck you, man. Like,
you know,
whoever
what?
You are.
I don't hate him. I hate his dad for listening to him.
Yeah, me too. Fuck both of you.
So, because the game would probably be a lot more lean and mean without that kind of
probably.
Shit.
Probably.
I don't
yeah.
know. So, before we get fully into presentation, another divisive aspect which we touched on is the post-session Desmond segments where you are walking around the office. So can we talk about how we feel about these?
I think these are the most interesting segments of the game, and all you do is press A and walk around.
Yeah, and read emails.
Yeah. So we should probably save this for the story segment, yeah. But there's kind of some optional story elements running through this game, yeah. Where when you walk around as Desmond, you can kind of investigate what's going on and why you're in this facility and who you are.
Yeah.
But it's kind of optional.
Yeah.
It's cool.
You can completely miss it.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool that they have. So basically, majority of the game, you're in this crusade simulator. And in between, when he needs to get some rest, in between chapters or targets or whatever, you have these optional moments where you can walk around and do stuff.
Essentially, the two scientists tell you to go to bed, but you can choose not to,
right.
And just go hack into people's emails and stuff, yeah. And see what's going on.
It's cool.
I think so.
So we mentioned this very briefly. Is it fair to say that this game got a lot of the important iconography right off the bat?
Yes.
Because I feel like... big things for me. I feel like the assassin robe design, which kind of looks like the one in Two Thrones, Prince mm-hmm. of Persia Two Thrones, I think that is insanely iconic. The logo, I have a friend who got a tattoo of it. The missing finger gesture, and the mantra, nothing is true and everything is permitted, are all insanely marketable.
Also, the hidden blade is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, because I make fun of Assassin's Creed so often.
Yeah.
I forgot how iconic a lot of the imagery is in the game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'd wear an Assassin's Creed cosplay, even though I don't like the franchise. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, and I forgot the missing finger hidden blade thing. Oh my God. I remember almost as a kid in high school doing the wrist motion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To have it come out of the blade, come out of your sleeve.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Like, yeah. It's really awesome.
It's very like a secret thing you know about, right?
But like, let me say this though. I got to go back to the Greg line of the episode. The vibe's right. But
that's the thing, is I was going to ask you if you like the game's overall aesthetic.
Yes,
I do a lot.
Yeah. Like, and I think the rug pull, which I do agree with you that if they rug pulled you later into the game, it would be cooler.
Yeah.
But I think the rug pull of it actually takes place in modern day, and the memory glitches is so neat.
Yeah.
I think the assassin's outfit is super cool. Mm-hmm. I think the hidden blade is so cool. The, I love the leap of faith, and you hear the bird cawing.
Yeah.
You hear
yeah.
the bird whistling or calling
fucking
out.
$1 million sound effect. Right there.
Dude, I want to make a statement. Like, if you're the sound designer of this game, you did your job.
Oh, hats off. Yeah.
And I will say, do you know what also feels cool, but it just isn't fun? Well, the whole thing. But what I think is cool, when you counter kill somebody, the crunching of bones and the grunting is cool.
It's like, gnarly.
Yeah, like even when enemies punch you in the stomach and knock you over, the sound design is good.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think even just like the way so I feel like some of the cities look similar to each other.
They all do.
Acker is a lot more like kind of blue and white. But the other two are kind of feel similar. I mean, just out of story necessity, I guess. So there's a lot of sameness like we talked about in Prince of Persia.
I'd like to bring up a flaw that intertwines the gameplay and the aesthetic, is that a lot of the advice that these side quests give you is to go here. Remember, this place is over this way. I don't know what anything looks like. Nothing is iconic.
Yeah.
Like, by nothing is iconic, I mean the scenery. But here's the thing. I'm also fighting myself because I think the game looks awesome.
Yeah.
The game looks amazing.
When you're dicking around in Messiah, it looks amazing.
But I think what's tough is that, are the cities historically accurate? Probably. They
yeah.
did their research, mm-hmm. but it's not conducive to the gameplay.
Yeah.
That's probably
not,
the best way to say it.
Well, it's conducive, I would say, to the parkour elements, but in terms of, and like escaping is... You know,
it's not conducive to people saying, oh, go here, go to the hospital. What
yeah,
the fuck
that,
does it look like? It looks
kinda,
like everything else.
Yeah, that yeah. kind of stuff. Not a huge fan.
No.
But in terms of, I don't know, it's just kind of, it's gritty without being ugly, I think. It's just,
I think this game is awesome looking.
Yeah, I think like for its time, especially.
This is a 2007 game.
I also like how Desmond's hoodie kind of looks like the assassin's robes.
Yeah.
You know what? I just remembered. I got confused about Acker earlier, Acker Ocker, because someone calls it Acker in the second or Brotherhood or
oh,
something.
Really?
They say it like that. So they probably do just exclusively mm-hmm. call it that. But the differences between like the way they talk about things in the future versus the past is very, because it's very kind of, I don't know, it feels like this grandiose adventure when it's happening in the Crusades.
Yeah.
But it's very like dissected with a scalpel in the future. Like, oh yeah, they did this a couple hundred years ago, whatever.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty cool divorce there. And something that else is interesting about the future segments is how sterile everything looks by comparison.
Yes.
Because it's all in this one office. It's very monochrome.
Yes.
It doesn't feel very lived in.
No.
I think that's very cool as well.
Prefabbed. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. So we talked about it was originally supposed to be a next generation Prince of Persia game, and it does in many ways feel like a kind of a grittier version of that. It may be a little bit less visually striking to some, but the level of detail I think is also very impressive, and I overall generally like the tone and atmosphere of the game too. Can we do a quick performance review of the main voice cast?
Oh, God.
Maybe a thumbs up, thumbs down.
Am I allowed to go middle of the road?
Okay.
I think the generic NPCs are a big thumbs down.
Yeah.
All of the pickpocketing, like side quests, all the generic sausage NPCs are all horrific. Desmond is okay.
Yeah.
I think the people, how do I put this? Ready? I'm going to go from lowest to highest. Generic NPCs, bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
Modern day is eh. And the main characters in medieval times are pretty good.
Okay. So
how do you feel?
Yeah, Desmond, Nolan North, he kind of like always portrays the same kind of, you know, mid-30s white guy, like very,
yeah.
he's doing his job kind of voice.
I forgot it was Nolan North.
I would say that Lucy, Kristen Bell, does a good job. She's very, injects a lot of personality into that character. I like the actor who plays Warren a lot.
Yeah,
I think he's a very good, you know, just piece, because I hated him.
I don't know this for a fact, but I'm going to accuse the game of this.
Okay.
I don't think these actors were in the room together when the lines were acted.
Yeah,
I don't think they're individually bad. I have a hard time believing some of the interactions between Lucy and Desmond were done face to face.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But just in terms of individual performance, I think he's a very successful evil scientist guy.
Yeah.
I think Al-Mualim is great.
Is he the best in this?
I think he's the best.
And I think Altair's interactions with him are pretty good.
So I wanted to ask you this because the voice actor for Altair got a lot of shit when this came out.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Because he's very like monotone and he doesn't necessarily sound like he's not doing an accent or anything like that. It's very
we going to critique Prince of Persia because they have English accents?
No.
Like,
but in terms of where Al-Mualim does have an accent.
I understand what you're saying. I think, do you know what can I throw a wrinkle at you?
Sure.
I believe the Animus is translating for you.
That's true. Yeah. Well, that's a good sweep.
You know what? Like fuck you, internet.
Right? Yeah, that's it. I mean, back then it was just kind of like, all right, this is the guy.
I will put my critique out there that I don't believe the voice acting was done by scene. I think they were done individually.
Yeah, yeah,
and if they were done together, that'd be hard for me to believe. But I'll say this. I think Altair is okay.
Yeah.
I think it's okay.
Well, the big reason that comes up a lot is because when Assassin's Creed 2 came out, people liked Ezio a lot more. Because
well, he also, is a lot more, like, if we're talking 2009, 2010, like, fidelity in performance became huge in the industry around then.
But in terms of, like, charisma and, like, kind of just having a lot of flavor to the character.
I'm not going to tell you he was awesome, but it was all right.
Yeah. All right. And one last thing I did want to say, one of the peasant lines that you get, like, just somebody... it stuck with me so much that I still think about it to this day is, what are you doing?
I'm about to do the line. Do you want to do the line?
Are you doing
the line? You do it. You do it.
It's when you're climbing up and you're trying to reach a vantage point or whatever, somebody on the ground goes, he's going to fall. If he does, I won't help him.
Yeah. So that's actually wasn't the one I was going to do.
What were you gonna
I'm
do?
Poor and sick and hungry.
It's because you hear the same ones over and over. It's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
But that one is really like,
he's going to hurt
so
himself.
Cruel.
And when he does, I won't help him.
Wow. See you later. Tough town.
Tough town.
Do you want to get into the story here?
It's the most interesting part, I think.
Yeah. So the game sets itself up by showing you that this guy, Desmond, I think he's supposed to be a bartender, has been kidnapped by this company called Abstergo. and they are forcing him to relive Altair's memories from the Crusades in this device called the Animus. It's kind of like plugging a guy into the Matrix, where it's just he's lying down on this big like MRI machine.
Yep.
And you go into this UI and it sends you there because they are trying to find some sort of important memory from this guy's past, but they can't get to it because the two characters are not synchronized properly.
Yep,
I believe
Abstergo is trying to find a map of artifacts, essentially.
And they attempt to skip to the important part, but they just can't do it. It's like corrupt.
And they think Altair would lead them there.
And so you have some strong feelings about the intro of this game.
This game, I am going to go to bat for this game in terms of the story, but just not right now.
Yeah.
The beginning of this game is rough. Yeah. Like it's kicks you into Altair, and Altair has to find a Templar artifact in a cave.
Yes.
But you walk around for 5 seconds, and where the artifact is does not look special. You barely do anything. You have an awkward conversation with some of your partners, and then like nothing happens. It's very truncated and feels awkward.
Yeah.
You don't navigate the tomb. Like essentially the game tells you, we're in this ancestral tomb. We got to find this artifact, and you barely do anything, and it's truncated and weird.
Yeah.
It feels like it was rushed in.
I think basically Altair begins as sort of this arrogant asshole who kills like an innocent person.
Yep.
And his compatriots are kind of giving him shit for being a dickhead, violating the creed, the Assassin's Creed.
And Altair's response is, "I'm better than you. Like, don't question
shut
me."
Up,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And basically they're just concerned that he's going to give them away because they're trying to find this Templar treasure called the Apple of Eden, I believe, from Solomon's temple in Jerusalem. And so they, after this weird sequence, it just feels like it should have been a cutscene.
Cause you don't go to Solomon's temple. Like you don't make your way in, you don't explore it.
Yeah.
Like it's weird.
But it introduces, I guess, sort of the main villain, we'll call him, of the game, Robert de Saab. And he is like the leader of the Templars, the Templar Knights, who are the, enemy of the Assassins, the nemesis. And so he kind of catches you as you're trying to do this, just because Altair is being so careless.
Catching you is generous. Altair fucking blows it.
He tries to kill him.
Yeah, so Altair essentially says to his compatriots, Robert de Saab is right here. I'm going to go kill him now.
Right.
And of course, they're like, no, don't. That's stupid. And then you try to do it anyway, and you get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so this results in one of the other guys getting killed, and the other guy gets maimed. His arm gets really fucked up. So in addition to this, kind of adding insult to injury, they inadvertently lead this division of Templars back to their headquarters at Messiah. And so this is this assassin hideout, it's this castle. It's a real place. Mm-hmm. It looks awesome. And so your supervisor, the head of the order, Al Mualim, he really gives you a dressing down.
Yeah.
He's like, you need to fucking fix this problem right now.
Yeah.
And so I think this is the first time when you take a leap of faith, and it's you and these other guys jumping off the tower into
the hay,
bales of hay, all very conveniently placed throughout the game,
of
underneath
course.
A big tower. But you have to do this like sneaky like Ewok attack where you roll some locks down.
Yeah, it's really weird.
It's pretty funny.
This whole opening segment is weak.
It's sweaty.
Yeah,
and so they get run off. And essentially what happens here is that you are going to be punished for your arrogant behavior. And he kills you, like fake
well,
kills
we
you?
We should say before he kills you, he asks you to kill Templars invading the town. Because remember, before he quote unquote kills you, you can run around as Altair almost fully powered up, and you do combat with some of the Templars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there is a little bit of a mission here that ends with them getting run off.
But. Well, anyway, back to your point where this is another weird part where Al-Mualim kills you, but he doesn't.
It was like, oh, I slowed your heart rate to a crawl or something like that.
He like stabs,
he stabs you.
He stabs you with a knife. There's no blood. And then... But then Altair's like, I thought you killed me or something. It's really weird.
Yeah. I don't know those memory glitches.
Really mean, odd.
But he's reborn as an initiate. You know, you have nothing. You have none of your, you only have like a very rudimentary sword
You don't even start with the sword. You get it after the first mission.
Right.
Yep.
It's cool. Yeah, because they give you a little tutorial.
Investigative task to do.
Who opened the doors for the Templars or whatever. And so he gives you, once you earn that, he gives you the first of many names.
Yep.
And so over the course of the game, he gives you these targets who are very powerful or influential men on both sides of the Crusades, who are not only considered really tough to kill. He knows that Altair can do it because he's a seasoned veteran, but it's also a way to like re-earn your stripes.
Yeah. So essentially you've got to kill these 9 targets. I'm going to give you back a piece of your power and a piece of your gear every time you do.
Yeah. And just kind of discipline or retrain him.
Honestly, kind of a cool way. I don't love how long of a tutorial it is because it feels like a 20-hour long tutorial.
Yeah.
I think you should get all your powers back earlier.
Yeah.
But I like the setup.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of this game's issues have to do with pacing and how they
Let me rephrase my statement. I think your combat ability should be restored to you earlier. I'm okay with weapons and items being later.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like, oh my God, how am I learning how to stop someone from grabbing me 20 hours in?
There really got to be these Gears moments where it's like, I need a tutorial or I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, like one of those. So in terms of the assassinations themselves, can we discuss, did any in particular stand out to you? Because I feel like most of them are pretty repetitive.
This is another unfortunate flaw of Assassin's Creed where none of the 9, well, towards the end, there's a little bit of intrigue, but most of them feel exactly the same.
Yeah.
And like the only one that stands out to me is the guy on the boat, because if you fall into water, it's game over because this game is so stupid.
That's something else we didn't talk about.
Where like they just didn't animate it. But I don't know. Here, I'm going to lay out a theory. I just don't think they wanted to include swimming sections.
Yeah,
so falling into water is an auto game over.
Yeah.
It should have just been like a Zelda. You lose a heart and reappear.
Right.
What are they doing? But anyway, none of the bosses to me feel special besides the end because all the areas look similar.
Yeah.
You kill them really the same way and you just get into open combat with them because information you're given is pointless.
Yeah. And so I remember really liking the hospital guy.
Yeah.
That was
kind
of cool. But otherwise it's very much, in terms of like the side quests are very formulaic. The information gathering is very formulaic, but also the way that you approach them is very formulaic, where they have this big scene showing you how and why they're such a huge piece of shit.
This is why they're bad.
Die. Right.
Yeah.
And in a very specific way, like, oh, like the book burning guy, and he's kicks somebody onto the fire, and just a very specific moment of cruelty, just in case you're on the fence about killing them.
Hitman Blood Money did this way better. Like where the bad guys are literally just walking around the world.
Yeah.
Like, and hey, if you know the information, great. If you don't, I'm like, hey, they're just here.
Yeah,
it's cool.
It just happened into them. But it's very stagey and it's very formulaic. You have to do it 9 times. It's rough.
It only gets cool at the way end.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just wanted to lay that out just because that's the basic structure of the game. And so once you hit this 9th one, it's supposed to be Robert himself.
You're talking about the funeral.
Yes. And that's one of your previous targets, a funeral for one of those guys.
Yep.
And you think that you are going to get the drop on Robert here. And I think this is for me when the game really kicks into high gear, like the story. Cause it's the first time something doesn't play out exactly as planned.
Yes.
So basically you are about to assassinate him and you realize it's a decoy. It's a woman who tells him that Robert is actually brokering a temporary truce between the Crusaders and Saracens to attack the assassins at Masyaf. So getting kind of into the end game here.
Can we talk about that interaction for a little bit?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's actually an interesting interaction with Altair and your handler. Like at that point where it's the point in the game where Altair says, no, I'm letting you go.
Right.
Because almost all of them beg for their life in some fashion. Or like, hey, why did you do this? We should bring this up too. We shouldn't skirt over it.
Uh-huh.
Where every time you kill a target, the information Al-Mualim told you, the target refutes it a little.
Right.
Where Al-Mualim said, you need to kill this person for this reason. And when Altair gets someone in the neck and Altair says, you did this, the guy says, well, not really. And it happens every time.
Or yes, but it there's more you should know.
So what starts to happen over the course of the game is that Altair doesn't trust what Al-Mualim is telling him.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's something going on here. And slowly over the course of the game, you start letting your handlers know, the dudes in the assassin bureaus, that yes. there's something wrong with Al-Mualim, and I don't know if we're supposed to be killing these people.
Yeah.
That's interesting, but... something that I think is cool, getting to the funeral bit.
Yeah.
You say to, what is the woman's name? I don't remember. I believe it is historically accurate that she exists.
It's Maria?
You could be right. Where you say to one of your handlers, like, it's kind of a funny moment where Altair says, I know I didn't kill him because it was a woman. And Altair says, yeah, it's a woman. I know that's weird. Right. And it's like kind of a funny moment because in 1200, that would be weird.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of a humorous moment.
Yeah. I think also with that particular hand, I think it's Malik, the guy with one arm.
Yes.
So I think I like this a little bit more than you did, where he is the guy who basically he lost his arm because of you at the beginning of yes. the game. And he's the way they show it. Maybe it could have been a little clearer, is that during the initial attack on Masayef, he shows up with one of his arms is very bloodied.
Yep.
And he has a very distinctive voice compared to the other assassins. Mm-hmm. So I pieced it together fairly quickly, but I could see it being a little too vague, where he can't be on active duty anymore. So he's running one of the bureaus.
Mm-hmm.
And during your first mission in that city, he is very rude to you.
Yes.
And he's like, I have to help you, so I'm going to help you. Give me the information and I'll give you the feather, because you have to dip a feather in the target's blood to prove that they're...
Another cool vibe thing in this game, right, that we glanced
the
over,
eagle feather.
Where like the reason why you go to the bureau is they have to give you an eagle feather.
Like their blessing.
And you have to dip the target's blood as proof.
Right.
That's cool. And they stamp it in a book. That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, yeah.
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 But anyway, what you're saying about this guy
was terrific, because the other bureau owners are just normal guys. But this guy, you know, the first time he's like, well, you know, you could have just been lucky. And then after the second one, he's a little bit warmer to you. And by the time the third one rolls around, he's like, I honestly, you know, I forgive you. You've proven that you're a different person.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. And he winds up helping you in the very end, which we'll get to. So you spare this woman because she's not your target. And you wind up catching up with Robert at the Crusader camp.
With King Richard?
Yes,
right?
Richard the Lionheart, where he's trying to talk to him and to convince him that the assassins are a threat. And you show up. You ride into their camp.
It's cool.
It's kind of off the map a little bit. And you essentially say the opposite thing. Like, no, here's what's going on. I think all these people that I've been killing are linked to the Templars. I think this guy is trying to usurp you. And I think it's cool that, like, do you want to talk about
I think it's cool. Like, I think it made more sense to me as an adult than it did as a kid.
Yeah.
I think what's happening here is that you're trying to tell King Richard, no, Robert de Sable is going to betray you as well.
Yeah.
And I've been asked to kill all these people to cause a chaos
right.
for him to take power during the chaos.
Yeah.
And what's neat is King Richard literally says, well, you know, assassin, you're telling me the opposite of Robert de Sable. We're going to let God decide. You guys duel.
And it's a real he said, she said situation.
And I'm like, number one, kind of surprising that he lets that happen.
Yeah.
But this whole game is kind of based on crusaders and faith and sort of the, you know, that
I don't know who
Christianity.
To trust,
I don't
to
know
believe.
Who to trust. And so we're going to let God decide. You guys duel.
Nothing is true and everything is permitted.
Yeah. And so what I think is really funny about this battle, if you don't mind, is the key to beating him is to just counter him or push him and you win, because you can't actually slash at him. It's really funny.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, like, it's just this, I don't know. It's fine.
It's as far as the combat can possibly go in this game.
It feels cool. Just like literally twisting his arm and kicking him in the butt over and over again.
Yeah. Well, it's this guy who's kind of an asshole in the beginning. It was sort of the instrument of your downfall, and it's really cool that you are one-on-one-ing him in front of this camp, in front of the king, and all these
in front
these
of people, all of his buddies and the king.
People watching.
It's cool.
Awesome.
It's a cool moment.
It's really just the staging. That's really incredible. So once you defeat him, he's kind of your final target taken care of. Robert confesses that Al-Mualim was behind it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how involved he was in the plot. But they're basically just playing the sides off each other,
yes,
as they were in the Crusades, just to obtain the apple from the beginning.
Essentially, Amu-Alim is betraying the Brotherhood, even though he accused you of it.
Yes.
He's betraying the Brotherhood to gain these artifacts, to gain power.
Yeah.
And he had you kill... Altair was correct, where he's... Amu-Alim is having you kill these cultural figures just to cause chaos on both sides, so people would hate the assassins and hate you. But really, we're causing chaos for a power grab. That's what's happening.
Well, so he can essentially obtain this relic
during
the chaos and take control.
Yes.
So he has had this. I don't know if we made that clear since the beginning of the game. The one-armed dude brings it back to Masai.
So at the beginning of the game, the one-armed dude, Malik, right?
Yes.
Malik, he does successfully get the Templar artifact and gives it to Amu-Alim.
Yes.
Essentially, essentially showing you up that not only did Altair fuck up, I got it.
Right.
Right, yeah.
It almost got screwed up completely, but...
Anyway.
And so Amu-Alim has had it and has been studying it this entire game.
Yeah.
So you ride back to Masayaf and to confront him. And what happens next?
I think this is one of the coolest parts of the game, right?
Yeah.
I didn't foresee this rug pull at all.
No.
With Amu-Alim being the bad guy.
And the way that they portray it, I think, does not go too far for me.
No, where essentially Amu-Alim, this is a cool boss battle where he essentially opens up the Apple of Eden to gain some kind of power.
Well, yeah, but he also enslaves the entire town.
He enslaves the entire town with some kind of mind control.
Yeah.
And then you're running through the town and then people are kind of Resident Evil 4-ing you
a little bit.
Kind of a Ganados thing.
Yeah. And you just have a couple assassins who are
you have to kill some of your comrades.
Lucid of mind enough to help you.
Right. Well, some of the assassins you have to kill.
Yeah.
And some of them are lucid in mind, and you say, try not to kill the townspeople. They're under mind control, and I don't understand it.
Yeah. Like Malik and some of the other guys show up to help you.
There's a cool thing about this, too, where they do a pretty good job of it's 1200 AD. Like science and magic is not explainable.
Right.
So Altair's trying to say, there's something wrong with everybody. I don't know what's happening, but try to keep people safe.
Right.
And I'm going to go confront this guy.
Yeah. It's very well handled. Because it's kind of at that point where you have these huge cult of personality figures, all these guys you've been killing are kind of like this. And it's like, what is so remarkable? I think even, some modern politicians that we can say, like, what is the appeal here? How are how do they have all these people eating out of their hands? And this is like, I wasn't expecting, because the Animus is a work of science.
Yes.
And this is like, it's kind of borderline when he reveals it. So he basically...
Amu-Alim.
Yeah, Amu-Alim opens it up and he creates all these like copies of himself. And it, like...
Yep, he creates copies of all the people you killed and copies of himself.
It's all like illusions.
Yep.
And... And can he freeze you, I think?
It's really cool. You're talking about this final boss battle.
Yeah.
What's really cool is you are desynchronized. Your health is at critical state the entire time. You can't be touched or it's game over.
Yeah.
What you have to do is you have to defeat these copies of Amu-Alim in combat without getting touched.
Right.
You have to essentially counter him and kill him over and over and over.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And
also, the screen is just bleeding red and blue like a computer is glitching and it's hard to look at. It's really cool.
Presumably because like the simulation or the program is being affected by the apple.
Yes.
Like the artifact.
It's very cool.
And
it's very like thematically like, oh fuck, this is definitely the end.
Yeah. Cause at a time when we drag the fucking combat through the mud, it's actually kind of engaging here. Cause it's a little different.
Cause it's one on one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little different though too. So obviously you final boss, you get the better of him. And Altair wants to destroy this artifact, but he can't bring himself to do it. And what happens is once the apple fully opens up, you see the globe and there's all these different artifacts
mapped out on the globe.
Mapped out on the globe where all the other ones are. And you hear Warren go, "We've got it."
Yep.
And then you wake up and that's what they were looking for. They just wanted to see where they could find all the other
ones. Where Altair didn't have the strength to destroy it.
Yes.
Yep.
And it, you know, knowing that it's still out there and how many other pieces are out there, etc. So that is more or less where the story ends. But, as far as the present day stuff is concerned, this little subplot we've been talking about with the office. So what I believe happens is that Lucy leaves you the key to your room.
So what's going on here is this is really neat.
Yeah.
Where actually, do you remember this? Some of the suits above, was his name Warren? What's his name? Some of the suits appear and they tell him, okay, kill Desmond. We've got what we need.
Yes.
And Lucy comes to your defense and says, no, what if we need him to find the other artifacts?
Right.
And so they let you live. Remember, throughout the whole game, there are emails and messages, kill Desmond when it's done, fuck him.
Right.
Even Warren almost says it in front of you. Like, hey, when you're done here, you're toast, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of odd. But I think, do you remember this moment? There is a key moment at the end of this. Lucy shows you that she's missing an assassin finger.
She bends it back.
She bends it backwards.
Yeah.
And so she's subtly telling you, I am not a Templar. I'm an assassin. I'm going to get you out of here, like, essentially.
Because essentially what they reveal over the course of the game is that Abstergo is the new, it's like supposed to be a pharmaceutical company, but it's like a front for the modern Templars.
Yeah, Abstergo is the Templars.
And her doing that is like the assassins still exist.
And I'm one of them.
It's a cool little twist.
It's very cool. Well, you know how the game actually ends?
That's as far as you can get in terms of exploration, is you just get into the conference room and read further about their plans throughout the globe and stuff. But Desmond also develops the eagle vision.
Yes.
And you see all these strange scrawls over your bed.
Yep.
And I think that's
Where credits roll.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know.
It's interesting. You're not sure if like your other ancestors got trapped here. They were trying to tell you something in the future. I think that's what they're hinting at.
Well, I mentioned this earlier too. Another interesting thing is that Warren and Al Mualim share a very similar face. It's like the model is slightly exaggerated in certain ways. They do the same thing with the Pope in the next game.
Oh, yeah.
But what do you think about the ending? Like, it's kind of open-ended.
I think it's cool. I mean, I don't love, like, the opening of the apple and, like, Altair sees the globe and we've got it. Like, I don't know if I love it. It's fine. I think
it could have ended maybe more on an exclamation point.
Yeah. I think it's okay. They ultimately found the deceit they were looking for was Altair was not able to destroy it. Warren gets what he wants.
Yes.
But Lucy showing you the missing finger.
Yeah.
It's cool.
That's great.
I think you having to use Eagle Vision to look at your room is kind of neat because if you don't know to do it, the game never ends.
Right.
It's cool.
Yeah. I like that. There's a lot of obviously theory crafting at that point because I played this on release.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
And it was very kind of like, man, I wonder what they're going to get up to next.
Mm-hmm. And they fuck it up.
Well,
give them a little bit of rope later on.
That's a YouTube exclusive.
Yeah.
So getting into conclusion here, so number one, I wanted to say I'm honestly kind of surprised it was derided for the right reasons at the time, but I'm honestly kind of, I was looking at like the scores, they were pretty high for what I was expecting.
I think it's got
time.
An early 80s meta score, right?
Yeah, early 80s. It was, considering how many things I would call wrong with it, I mean, it's not like we're going back and we're reclaiming Assassin's Creed 1, but in terms of, because it was fairly well received at the time, but in terms of how, like, people never talk about
fans
it
think
now,
it's the worst one.
Yeah. And now they're releasing this new one, Mirage, which is kind of a
throwback,
a throwback to the same setting, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I guess despite all these aforementioned problems, do you like this game?
I don't know. I feel like these final thoughts, I really need to juggle the grade here.
Okay.
I think this game is riding a lot on vibe alone.
Yeah.
It's riding a lot on aesthetic and vibe.
Yes.
Like, I think this
maybe is the hardest ever.
Yeah. This is going to be one of the hardest grades.
Yeah.
I think it's also tricky. I do think the gameplay loop is really poor.
Yeah.
I think how do I even put this? The only way to fix this game is if the gameplay was completely gutted.
Yeah.
Right? You'd have to completely change how natural the investigations are.
Yeah.
And you got to make combat more fluid. Mm-hmm. You're gutting the whole thing, really. Because think about it. All you do is get visual, go to side quest. They're all the same. You got to gut it.
Yeah.
And that's tricky. Do I like it? I don't know. What I would say is it's the most interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not telling you I like playing it.
And
that's, I don't know where to go beyond that unless you can take us further.
I think I share, it's a little basic, but I kind of share that this game was just disappointing in terms of what people thought it was going to be. And I think even now, it's judged on its own merits. Like, yeah, it's, you know, we'll talk about the legacy in a bit, but in terms of the game standing on its own two legs, I think just the gameplay loop is just really lacking. But it rides very hard on that vibe, which I like, and I don't think any of the other games have that I've played.
Well, here's where we're not going to talk about the second one, on especially today.
Right.
The second one is fun to play, but I think they blow some of the story stuff. Then I start battling with myself. The first one's more interesting. I don't like
but
playing
in terms
it. Is
of,
it better?
Maybe I'm prejudiced because I'm Italian, but I don't think the second game has the vibe.
No.
The vibe of this game is very interesting.
It's very, but I keep saying it though, it's the most interesting one, but do I like playing it? Not really.
Yeah, it's tough but the thing about it is that's also interesting is that the last couple bits are my favorite part.
Yes.
And I can't think of any other time.
Yeah.
Like very few.
When a game ends on a high, I'm generous.
Yes. Well, especially compared to how many, you know, start out amazing and then disappoint you.
Of course.
The disappointment is front loaded here. And if you power through it, you get kind of an interesting one.
Get a little deadly premonition reward. Are we going grades? Do you have anything else?
I am going to go with my grade for this particular game.
I have no idea what you're going to say either.
I'm going to go B minus.
On my notes, I have C+/B- discuss.
Wow, we're right there.
Dude, I just... Okay, wait. Do you want to... should we maybe, I might discuss it like this. Does this game deserve a B minus? No, but I think I'm going to give it a B minus.
Cause I'm thinking about, I personally, well, cause I don't know, the scale's all screwed up now. Cause I gave Prince of Persia, Two Thrones. I gave a C+, and I like this game more than that one.
Yeah, I do. Ooh, I do too. So I think we have to go B minus. Well, I'll say this. I could say they are the same, but I dislike very different things about them.
Yeah, I mean, but this game plays, it's just boring in parts.
This game, you know what? I think I had like a prepared statement here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I think this is actually a Riley quote, I think.
Oh, geez.
There are great ideas in this game. There's something here.
Yeah.
But the gameplay is so monotonous, it's so fucking boring.
Yeah.
Like, it's so boring.
It's the execution is very... I don't know.
Can we really go B minus? Like,
well,
do you feel bad giving it a C+? Is it one of the, dude, I think I will go B minus, but I don't think it deserves it. I think that's as far as I would go.
Yeah. Because I mean, I mentioned going to bat for this game. I just really feel like I have to fairly drag it where it needs.
Yeah,
it.
I think we did,
you know, I think there's something there. I think B minus is like my disappointment zone, you know, where it's like, oh, I'm kind of feeling it. Like it's right below. I said C+ is, I almost enjoyed it. This I did enjoy.
Yeah.
Ultimately, like I look back on it.
I like it
with fondness.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know if I ever want to play it again.
I did for the show.
No, but I mean, after this,
after
you
this.
Know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm glad we talked about it though, because I feel like no one else ever talks about it.
No. I do. You know what though? Do you have anything else or just the final?
I was just going to ask you in terms of the effect that it's had on the industry, because this is kind of going to be the end of our Ubisoft series here.
Yeah.
We've charted this through their platformers and how Prince of Persia kind of set the template and this kind of made it go worldwide, like mainstream. Yeah. Like we've talked about how all the gameplay aspects are very easy to grasp. They're very monotonous.
Yep.
This is series. What it's become has become the definition of play it when you're burnt out after work series.
Yeah.
And that is really like there's not much more engaging gameplay wise than that. If you just want to pick up a controller and move it forward and do very simple tasks.
Well, can I make a grand statement?
Yeah.
This is the game that started the slang term Ubisoft open world game.
Yes.
Because
this is the Oppenheimer moment.
Yes. This is Assassin's Creed is unfortunately one of the most influential games of the past 15 years.
Yeah.
Because it is a collectathon. It's dull as fuck. And but other open world games copied the style, right? Where your mini map becomes a chore list.
Yes.
You have these vantage points where you unlock mini map points. So many games copied this. Ubisoft open world game, air quotes, has become a thing.
Well, and it's really kind of an example in learning the wrong lessons, because this game, I think it sold quite well.
Yes.
Enough to warrant a sequel, at least.
15 of them.
Which, but in terms of the merits of this game alone, Assassin's Creed 2 is really where they earn their blank check.
Yes.
But this game, it's not winning on the gameplay. It's not selling a million units on the gameplay. I think they really just learned the wrong lessons. And it's like, oh, people, you know, like it was almost there. Let's just do more of the busy work.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I feel like the strength of this game is how well it played the vibe, the tone, and how, you know, they dip their toe into the supernatural without going too far. That's a big...
Can we invoke Nicole Atkins again? Is that okay?
Go ahead.
We do a couple of times. The mystery is more interesting than what we're shown, right?
Mystery always beats what I'm shown.
Correct.
That's her line. But...
So what I mean by that is the rug pull with the Animus was too early.
Yes.
Keep it going. The outfits are cool. The hidden blade is cool. The animations are cool.
Yeah.
But the gameplay isn't. And you took the wrong lessons. Not you, but Ubisoft learned the wrong lessons from this.
They pretty much just... I said it got better. There's more stuff to do. I don't think a lot of it, at least the ones that I've played, have been more engaging than that.
No, it's arguably been the same, or I'm not going to say worse. It's been the same, but different.
Yeah. And I think that I had my question for you was going to be, do you think people will ever get bored of this? And I don't think so.
No, I'd like to make one.
I don't think anybody else will.
You know what's a good question for you? Where did you fall off of the franchise? Where did you stop playing it?
As they were coming out, 2 was the last one I played. And then later I caught up. I got up to the beginning of Assassin's Creed 3. Where they make you play as the dad for hours.
Yes.
And that was it. I was like, I can't
stopped
do anymore.
After 3.
Yeah.
So, I mean, can I make one statement to the audience?
Yeah.
The pirate one is not good. You guys are fucking crazy.
Oh, really?
I've
heard good things about that one.
Oh, it fucking blows.
Okay.
It's just as bad as if you agree with us about the gameplay aspects we think are bad and how negative Assassin's Creed has been on the industry, you will agree that 4 is bad.
Okay.
But if you don't agree with any of that, you're going to think I'm crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think we should do a rapid fire exclusive of the other sequels.
Probably.
Just for some basic thoughts. But in terms of this game and the effect it had, it's really, I don't know, it's unfortunate because I feel like we started out, you know, when thinking back to Rayman 2 and that kind of thing and the path Ubisoft took. And it's really like, it feels like there's so much less diversity in action adventure games now. And this is kind of patient zero.
Well, you also had another Riley quote off mic that I want to say.
Oh, go ahead.
You said, I'm not going to quite get it right. You said something like Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, like whenever they tried to iterate on it, it was always worse.
Yeah.
Like, harking back to our previous episode, Warrior Within is worse than Sands of Time. Mm-hmm. Two Thrones is worse. Prince of Persia Self-Titled is worse. Forgotten Sands is worse. I think Assassin's Creed is worse.
Yeah.
But the reason why we covered this is we really wanted to show people that Assassin's Creed started with Prince of Persia Sands of Time. And if you have not played Prince of Persia Sands of Time, we give it a huge recommendation. And that's really why we covered this.
It's definitely better than any Assassin's Creed game. And it is... I think Assassin's Creed is maybe just the marketable Prince of Persia.
I hate you.
Because you can take it anywhere.
Yeah.
You know? And even if it doesn't make any fucking sense that assassins are on pirate ships, but just put them on, you know, like...
Just do it.
They just did it. And that's how they made their millions. You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's all I got. You got anything else?
No, I'm just depressed that this is where we are. But
yeah,
but
this
I
is
think
where we are.
We did our jobs. We chronicled the history of action adventure games and how Ubisoft reinvented and then subsequently murdered them.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to our show.
Yeah. And Prince of Persia Sands of Time is one of the most influential games ever made. Fuck you, we're out.
It's incredible.
All right, Goodbye. Thank you guys. See you next time.